from the Gothic Quarter in Barcelona. This is Market Movers, the podcast that gives you a closer look at the financial markets to trade responsibly. Here are your hosts, Lior Cohen and Yochai Elam.
Hello and welcome, and thank you for joining us and telling a friend, family member, or a coworker about the show. I'm your co-host, Lior Cohen, and joining me, he's the Captain Crunch of Forex Crunch, Yochai Elam. How's it going, Yochai?
Hi, Captain. That's me. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well, yeah, and the captain is in the house, and we have a busy schedule ahead of us, because this week we're going to talk about October's main events in the financial markets, worth taking notice, including from the ECB rate decision, the FOMC's meetings, and the minutes of the last meeting, and China, UK, and US's GDP growth rate for the third quarter. But first, let's kick it off the show with several questions you should ask yourself to improve your trading strategy.
Right, so if you've been trading Forex for quite a long time, take a moment's rest to think about what you could improve and ask yourself just a few questions. Let's start with a few. So, do you have the necessary time required to trade? That means, how busy is your diary and how many commitments do you have? If you have too many, you should perhaps think twice about trading, because successful trading will take up a lot of your time. Like anything else that you would do, if you dedicate more time and more energy to that, you will improve and you'll have better results. So you should really check out if you have the required time. In addition, you should set yourself some goals. What returns are you hoping for? Did you ever actually think about it? I know some people just want to make a lot of money in Forex trading, but...
I think that's the whole point, no?
Yeah, but if you have some kind of objectives, you can measure yourself, you can have some realistic goals. Knowing what returns to go for is crucial in order to build a consistent trading strategy. I mean, your strategy also depends on what you're aiming for. And what else should you ask yourself? What stops you from becoming reckless? Because many traders just lose it. They become so emotional. I mean, I think we've mentioned this more than once, but it's a recurring topic and it's a painful spot for many traders. So you should make sure you know your emotional triggers so that you can react when the bad times hit, because no trader wins 100% of his trades at the maximum take profit level. So, of course, there are losses and sometimes a few consecutive ones, and you should prepare yourself for that.
That's true. And I remember that I read a book about a mathematician goes to Wall Street or something like that. And his entire premise, he was a mathematician and he lost a lot of money in the stock market. And he actually said that he wrote this book just to cover some of his losses. And one of the main points that he had is don't fall in love with a certain stock. So don't be emotional about a certain stock, because that's what he did. So even mathematicians who are supposed to be have more common sense, at least, they're still humans just like us. And this guy, yeah, it was pretty funny that's all he did in the entire book. Most of his comments were just about this point that you pointed out about having an emotional, in his case was emotional and affectionate to a certain stock, if you will, and
right.
That's how he lost a lot of money. So if you don't want to write a book about how you lost a lot of money to cover your losses, this is sound advice, always worth taking notice of.
Yeah, and in addition to having some traders that just become emotional, get in love with the stock or a currency pair or something like that, some traders just make out very, very complex methodologies. So what you can do is just try to describe it. If you can describe your trading strategy in a few short sentences, you probably know what you're doing. You can explain it. You can even write a book perhaps one day about it. But if it's too complicated, it probably doesn't make much sense, and perhaps you should try to simplify it or ditch it and start a whole new strategy. So these are just a few points, questions you should ask yourself. There are, of course, many more, but I think maybe perhaps we should get going with the events.
We'll start off with the ECB rate decision that we have this week on October 2nd. So following last month's big surprise from ECB President Mario Draghi, in which the ECB reduced the cash rate, should we expect some big changes this time?
No, this will probably be some kind of anticlimax in terms of new measures. Last time, not only did the ECB cut the interest rates, but Mario Draghi also announced the ABS program to expand basically the ECB's balance sheet, and according to his hints, it might reach 1 trillion euros. So this time we can get maybe perhaps more details about this program. Of course, no more cuts are expected because he said we reached the lower bound. The big question is if he will express optimism because bank lending, for example, has improved, or pessimism because all the rest is really bad because there is no growth. Inflation, from fresh details, is still very low despite the fall of the euro. And I believe he'll try to hit the euro when it's down. The euro fell quite a lot, at last 126, now flirting around this level. And I think I'll take a page from the book written by, we're a lot into books today, of the RBNZ, Graham Wheeler, who just rode on the market's sell-off of the New Zealand dollar and continued saying it's unjustifiable and unsustainable, the strength of the Kiwi dollar. I think that Draghi will do the same, express pessimism, or at least say he's ready to do, again, whatever it takes and try to push the euro even lower. A lower euro means better exports and higher inflation.
So the main thing is that we'll have to look for one thing is, as you said, whether or not Draghi will, what's this, the tone of the press conference that follows the ECB rate decision, in which the rate is likely to remain unchanged. But the other thing is also to look for any additional input about ABS program, right?
Yeah, I think we'll get a bit more technical general details, but you won't get one single number about its size. We'll just hear once again that it's sizable. And we'll hear that the ECB is ready to do even more, such as outright QE, as buying government bonds. But I'm not sure we'll get a real number this time, just we'll get sort of a general tone.
So we won't get the numbers, the date it will commence. These issues remain, or more likely to remain, unclear in this coming meet. And after that, we have the following day, on October 3rd, we have the non-farm payroll report. This is one of the major reports from the U.S., showing the progress about the U.S. economy. Last time, the non-farm payroll report came pretty short at 142,000 jobs that were added, and unemployment inched down to 6.1%, even though in the previous four reports, the growth rate was well above 200,000 in each time. Now the big question is what to expect in this upcoming report and how it will impact the markets and the Fed. So let's start off with the expectations. So what do we have?
Yeah, so it's important exactly to look back at August's number because it was just an outlier. I hope so. Everybody hopes so, that the U.S. is still gaining a lot of jobs. Many analysts say that August is usually hard to count and usually there are big revisions. So we'll need to see either a rebound in previous data or perhaps both, but or a return now to above 200K of job gains, and expectations stand at around 220K. So we need to see that. We need to see the participation rate tick back up from the rock bottom level, the historic low of 62.8, and hopefully also a rise in wage inflation that is stuck at around an annual level of 2%.
So it's worth noticing not only the main numbers that everybody are just seeing in the headlines, the rate, the unemployment rate and the number of jobs added, but also to look at the participation rate and the wages. These are also key figures that might not have such an impact on the market's reaction, maybe, because it's not in the headlines, but over a longer period could give us more input in regards to how the labor market is progressing. And also it may impact the Fed's monetary decisions, right?
Right, because this week we already saw the core PCE price index that we talked about in the past, and it stayed at an annual level of 1.5%. That's still very calm. And
so there's no growth, so it still remained pretty flat, even though core CPI, for instance, grew a little bit in the past few months and rose to around 2%, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, but the Fed looks at the core PCE price index and, of course, wage inflation, and these are a bit lukewarm, let's call it that way. And so if we get a headline number of 220,000, I think the market will focus on a revision to August, the participation rate, and the average hourly earnings, also known as wage inflation. So if all the figures go in the same direction, if they are positive, of course, the dollar will extend its rally. And if they all go rogue, we could see a big correction after the huge dollar rally that we've seen in recent weeks.
Yeah, Yeah, and on the other hand, I'll also point out that when it comes to gold and silver, usually they tend to have some sort of a negative correlation with the rise in number of jobs, especially when you take into account the expectation. So if it goes way above expectations, then it tends to have a negative reaction for gold and silver, and vice versa. And last time, for instance, it was fell below expectation, and gold and silver declined, rose just a little bit, so didn't have much of a reaction from this side when it came short. But on the other hand, I think that if we'll see, as you said, well above 200,000, and maybe it'll be very positive this time, then we could see a negative reaction from the bullion prices. So it'll be interesting to also follow these turn of events. And after the non-farm payroll report, let's talk about the Fed, of course. We have two major items on the agenda, on the docket. We have on October 8th, we have the minutes from the last meeting, and we have the FOMC decision on October 29th. So let's start with the minutes. What are the current expectations?
Well, the FOMC meeting minutes reflect the views of all members of the Fed, and usually the average is more hawkish than the actual decision than Chair Yellen. So in recent releases of the minutes, we've seen a more hawkish tone, and we've seen the dollar rally afterwards. This doesn't reflect what the Fed will actually do and what Yellen thinks, but it does shake markets, of course. And it's the last decision in which we had QE tapering. So it'll be, of course, a major market mover. I think we'll see, first of all, some kind of a dollar rally, but then when we reach the European session in the following day, we could see that fade off, perhaps.
Okay. And also notes when it comes to gold, for instance, in the last minutes that were released on August 20th, there was a pretty sharp tumble for gold. It fell by roughly 1.5% almost in the following couple of days after the minutes were released. So it also, as you said, also depend on the tone of the minutes, because we had in the last meeting, we had the presentation, and we had a press conference, so we had an abundance of economic figures. And the market reacted accordingly. So it will be interesting to see the other participants and their comments, and see how the reaction will come from for also not only for US dollar but for also for precious metals.
Yeah, I think it'll more of, let's say, serve as a warm up for the bigger event, which is the end of QE, the decision on the Fed decision at the end of the month. Because, as you said, last time we had lots of economic figures and we had a press conference. So now we'll have the minutes of this meeting, but we already got a lot of information. And now the focus is on October 29th. It's the official end of QE. There are will be no surprises in that front. The Fed will stop buying bonds. It currently buys $15 billion per month. And the focus remains on the wording, considerable time before rate hike. So far it's said that after the end of QE, it'll take a considerable time before raising the rates. But now QE ends. So I do expect some kind of modification. The considerable time phrase could be related to the current time, but not to the end of QE. Some also expect the Fed to remove this phrase. I think we'll see that in December, and that in December we'll also hear from the Fed more details about the exit strategy, and Yellen will just have an opportunity to explain what the removal of considerable time means and perhaps hint about when a rate hike is coming. But I think she won't do that when there is no press conference.
So it's not likely that we'll see in October 29th, we'll see in the statement some more clear guidance in regards to when the rate hike will commence, or not even a time frame or something like that. It all depends whether or not we'll take out the considerable time phrase or not. So this will be one of the main focus from this meeting, right?
Right. Also, last time we had two dissenters. 2 out of 10 members voted against the decision, went hawkish. I think this will be seen once again, or perhaps only one dissenter, but not more than two. All in all, I think this could also be eventually quite a bearish event for the US dollar. but perhaps only temporary.
Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting. And for one thing, I think everybody will be happy that no longer we'll have to talk about tapering. That'll be off the agenda for good. So
yeah.
So that's good. We won't have to use that buzzword anymore. Remember the 2013 fiscal cliff? That was looked like so such a long time ago. But
yeah, and the debt ceiling.
We got rid of that. Yeah, the debt ceiling. Yeah, we had so many buzzwords.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. Yeah. You're taking me down memory lane, and it's not so good.
Yeah.
So yeah. So at least we'll get rid of tapering. We'll get rid of maybe on from considerable time. That's also something that buzzword. Maybe we'll get rid of that. So
yeah, we'll get back to normalization, and we still have the underutilization.
So, oh man, wow, yeah. That's really a music to my ears. Yeah, so we'll have that. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So that's those are big events. They'll concentrate at the end of the. At the end of the month, we also have several other interesting reports to consider along the month from the GDP. We'll revolve in China, UK, and the US, the GDP growth rate for the third quarter. These are preliminary estimates. And let's start off with China. Where do you see with when it comes to China?
Well, whatever figure comes out, nobody's going to believe it anyway. But wait, okay, let's talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very convenient.
How convenient!
Yeah, so according to all kinds of indexes, China is growing slower than the official target of 7.5 and the official growth rate, which is around that number. Electricity consumption, bank lending, and cargo. So I think we will see some kind of downgrade. There have been many worries, especially with the fall of the price of iron ore. And Europe needs Chinese demand, and it's not only an Australian story, but a global story. So I think we'll see some kind of number that will be lower than the Chinese target of 7.5%, but not too low to scare the markets. Something that will be sort of believable. So we have that on October 21st. I think we'll have something like 7.2%. If we have a high number, nobody's going to believe it. And if it's going to be under 7%, I think we're going to have some kind of panic attack in the markets.
Yeah, that could be very panicky. And also, when it comes to China, one of the big factors that it could have an impact is the oil. And the recent slowdown in China's economy resulted also in a decline in the oil prices, especially Brent oil. And when you see the gap between Brent and WTI, we saw that it contracted to around $5. Low are the days where it was around $20. So on the one hand, we have some slowdown in the global demand, at least the expectation for slower growth rate in the global demand outside of when we exclude the U.S., and on the one hand, and on the other hand, we have the U.S. It shows a little bit more a steady growth in its global oil demand. But on the other hand, it also has a rise in oil production. So we have a lot of hands. That's for one thing we know. And the other hand, we see that the U.S. Oil market remains pretty stable with rising oil production, but also rising demand. But on the global scale, outside of the U.S., we see that China's economy is slowing down a little bit, and they may have also reduced the expectation for global demand growth rate. And when it comes to production, well, we have in OPEC we have a steady rise in Libya's oil production, so it's still very low, but it's growing pretty steadily, and that loosens up a little bit the global oil markets, and it contracts the Brent to WTI.
What about this news that came out of Russia that they found this huge oil reserve in the North Pole or in the Arctic Ocean?
Yeah, we have this, as you said, it's pretty interesting news. Exxon and Rosneft struck oil in the Kara Sea region on Russia's Arctic Ocean. And it's pretty vague in regards how big it is, but very early estimates show that it will be 100 million tons of oil and 340 billion cubic meters of gas. So yeah, it's going to be pretty big, but it's still a long way to go because early drillings are the earliest it will probably be next year, according to Rosneft's CEO. with or without Exxon. We have also to consider that there is still a ban on U.S. oil companies to drill in Russia because of the current sanctions that the U.S. and Europe imposes on Russia with respect to Ukraine. At least for now, Rosneft's CEO says they'll drill with or without Exxon. It doesn't mean they'll divide the partnership. It just will continue to do that. But early production may start only in 7 years from now, and that's the very early estimate. So it's a long way to go from that. But still, as you say, when you come to talk about oil production outside of OPEC, we see that there is expectations for a rise in production from Russia, as you said, from Argentina. There are other non-OPEC countries. The U.S. continues to grow its oil production. So we still see from non-OPEC countries a steady rise and expectations for a rise in the coming years. So this may also be one of the factors to contribute for the slowdown in the oil prices, and also calls for among OPEC members to bring down the oil quota. At least in the headlines, it was Iran that is stressing out that it might be better to reduce the oil quota, which is currently around 30 million barrels per day. So there's that to consider. It's still pretty speculations where it's going, but with non-OPEC countries production is picking up, I think the oil market will continue to loosen up on a longer scale. So from China and the oil, we have to move on to the UK. So there's the UK GDP. What's up with that?
Yeah, so similar to the US, the UK releases GDP 3 times. But usually the revisions are quite small, so the first one has the biggest impact. In the last few quarters, the UK economy grew by around 0.8%. We got the upgrade for the second quarter to 0.9% on a quarterly basis. The third quarter will already be slower. We already have some indications that it's slower. Nevertheless, it's still an annual level of around 3%. We'll probably get a quarterly level of around 0.5%. This will be very important for the decision in November for the Bank of England, if it raises the rates or it waits like everybody expects at the moment till February. It has an impact on the Bank of England's inflation report, which is released in November. It's every 3 months, November, February, May, and August. So I think it'll have quite a big impact on the markets, because we had this almost the same growth rates for quite a few quarters, and now it'll be a bit different, but the question is how different it'll be.
So that'll be a big question that might stimulate a little bit the financial markets, especially when it comes to the British pound.
Yeah, we had some calm in the British pound after the huge moves around the Scottish referendum. Scotland is definitely, at this moment, yesterday's news. Everything Scotland-related is a UK internal thing at the moment and doesn't move markets. And we didn't get too much data recently, so the Bank of England's decision and, of course, the GDP, and this month we get the most important first estimate, I think will give a new shine to the pound.
So if we talk about the GDP from the UK, before we move on to the US GDP, let's talk about the Bank of England's the meeting from on October 9th. After we had a lot of, as you said, a lot of commotion over the Scottish referendum, and the British pound continued to decline, especially around against the US dollar, should we expect any big headlines, big thrill, any thrills from the upcoming meeting?
We can't expect a rate hike at this point, so no, the Bank of England is expected to leave all the current policy unchanged, its QE program and the interest rate, but markets are already getting a bit more jittery towards the potential rate hike, so it's no longer a non-event. It's no longer only a wait for the meeting minutes to get some hints, but I think that already with this BOE meeting on October 9th, we'll see the pound moving back and forth. I think we might see it drop a bit on no rate hike, even if everybody expects it. And I think this thing will only intensify as the pressure mounts. November it'll be an even bigger response, and until the Bank of England eventually hikes the rates.
And from the UK, let's move to the US. We have the GDP on October 24th, and this will come There will be, as you said, the preliminary estimate, the first one of the three, and usually the first one has the strongest reaction. And this comes after, in the previous report, we saw that the U.S. economy grew by 4.2%, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Well, yeah, on October 30th, we get the first estimate for U.S. GDP. Like the UK, it's released three times, but contrary to the UK, it changes all the time. So we had 4% in the first release, 4.2% in the second one, and 4.6% in the last release. This is an annualized level, not quarter on quarter. It's a big bounce from the heavy winter, the 2.1% contraction in Q1. So now we're back to normal. No, nothing weather related, no bounce from bad weather. So the question is the U.S. economy growing at a pace that is closer to 3% or closer to 2%? I think, according to all the data we've seen so far, for Q3 it'll be closer to 3%, somewhere between 2.5 and 2.8, I believe. Of course, these estimates will become closer as we get closer to the date. This release tends to surprise. It's released one day after the FOMC decision. We can suspect that the Yellen and her colleagues will get the data before we get it.
So what is it? What, they get special privileges over us?
Yes, they do.
What's that? Yeah. What's that all about?
Yeah, you
this
know.
This aggression will not stand, man.
Yeah.
That's not right.
Yeah.
So if you don't mind.
Well, I do mind. The dude minds. This will not stand, you know? This aggression will not stand, man.
Let's protest there, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay, we'll have to start our own protest about that, okay. So we'll, as you said, we'll probably see around 3%. There's still a lot of noise in the data that we'll probably see such big shifts as was the case in the previous reports. But yeah, we'll probably have a strong initial market reaction, especially if it'll be much different than the current expectations, obviously.
Right.
And it will be right close to the FOMC meeting, so we might see a little bit of fireworks at the end of October when it comes to the U.S. The FOMC GDP. And besides that, we'll also have in Europe, we'll have the all elusive asset quality review, AQR, also known as the bank stress test results. So what should we expect from that?
The ECB already failed a few times with these stress tests. ECB and other European institutions didn't convince markets that these tests are strong enough, because we had other cases afterwards, like the collapse of Irish banks after the stress tests, and recently in Portugal we had the Espírito Santo bank collapse quite rapidly. So also similar to the Chinese GDP, the stress tests need to fail some banks to show that they're serious, but not to paint a really gloomy picture. The situation, the condition of banks has improved since the dark days of the crisis. And recently they also began lending a bit. But if the results are too good, they will be too good to be true and unbelievable. So I think we'll see a few sporadic fails of the test. Some banks will be required to raise more capital. But I think the good thing in the long term that once these tests are over, once the results are out there, banks would no longer need to prepare for the tests, and they can lend more to the real economy. And so I think beginning from November, we'll see even more lending. The big importance of this, of the stress test results, is that they will be behind us on October 27th, and it'll be good news for Europe. This doesn't mean the euro will rise immediately. It'll take some time, but it'll be positive for the euro come 2015.
Okay. So we have that to consider. And as you said, so we'll have a busy month ahead of us. And it'll be interesting to see how these financial reports and events will turn the markets around. Okay. So that's it for now. Thank you as all for listening. Thank you, Yochai, as usual.
Thank you, Lior. Going to have a lot of excitement very soon.
And thank you all for subscribing and spreading the good word. And if you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, then drop us a line on our website. It's forkcrunch.com or tradingenergy.com. So until next time, this is Lior signing off for Yochai, saying have a great week and invest responsibly. We'll be right back.
For comments, suggestions, and questions, visit the podcast page at forexcrunch.com or tradingnrg.com, where you can also find past episodes and subscribe to the show. Our listeners make Market Movers possible.